Hi, welcome to my podcast, Just Jill, where I talk about all things metaphysical, spiritual, and energetic. Each episode is a short story about my life, and where I give live examples of what I've experienced in effort to teach and to also validate your own experience. I hope you enjoy. This episode is a special one to me for several different reasons, but I'm dedicating this episode in memoriam to those who have lost their lives on September 11th due to the terrorist attacks in New York City and also the flight that crashed in Pennsylvania. So this episode is about that day for me and then my subsequent visits to New York City. So on September 11th, I was actually living in Seattle, Washington. I was going to college, I was going to art school, and I worked downtown in an office. It was about 6:30 in the morning, and I was getting ready, and I actually had the TV on, which I normally didn't, to watch the news while I got ready. Just sort of white noise. You know, you're listening, and you're getting ready. And the normal morning news broadcast switched over to breaking news, and that is the first tower. So when the first tower was hit or there was an explosion, they switched over all the news to that. So those of you that were alive that day and have your own stories about how you found out or what you were watching can probably relate to some of this. So they switched over the news, and of course I stopped what I was doing and I began watching it in shock. Now, this wasn't the first sort of attack on the Twin Towers. There had been a bomb in a lower level or in the parking garage before, and there are a couple of attempts. So those of you that know the history of the Twin Towers and some of the attempts to bomb them, you'll understand the history behind that. So some of us were shocked, and some of us were like, well, not that it's not shocking, but had understood that it could very well likely be some sort of terrorist act because it had happened before. So we're watching with lots of questions. The reports start coming in that a plane had hit the tower and that, that they weren't really sure if it was an accident or if it was intentional. And as we're watching, we see the second plane hit the other tower. I can't really explain how, you know, to people that haven't seen that or haven't watched it or haven't experienced it live and you're understanding that you just watched people, perish in a horrific accident. It's overwhelming and it takes you a while to process, just as if you were to witness any harsh act, that you don't normally. So while I'm, you know, sort of processing what I'm seeing, I finish getting ready for work and I get on the bus and I head downtown to Seattle to my office job first. We get into downtown and it is quiet. The bus ride was quiet. People aren't talking. And the most eerie thing was there were no planes flying over downtown. They had grounded all air traffic. And the flight pattern to SeaTac Airport is directly over downtown Seattle. So if you've ever flown into Seattle, you can see, you know, you see downtown, you see the Puget Sound, and then you land in SeaTac, which is just south of downtown. And there was nothing. And eventually the air traffic that did exist was only military jets, which was sort of even more eerie because there is this uncertainty about what was going to happen next. So we get into the office, I get into the office, my coworkers get into the office, walk into the building that was designed by the same architect as the two towers. So it's like a mini replica and you're just sort of processing the what ifs and what would you do and how would you respond and how would you react? You know, as we're watching live on TV, you start to see the desperation in people that are in those buildings after the attacks and them jumping out of those buildings to certain death because they didn't want to die in the building and there was no other, you know, it's which is the worst of the two. And your heart just, you know, seizes having to make those decisions and knowing all of the ripple that, you know, of those lives affected. So through the years, you know, we memorialize and we talk about that day, and we all have our story attached to it. We all have our memories from that day. Years later, I decided to take a trip to New York City, and I was so excited. And I also felt a little concerned because I didn't know what I was going to see or feel when I got to ground zero, they call it. Ground zero. But this story isn't just about ground zero. The story is about other places in New York City as well, and the energetic effects of those places and spirits that I encountered there. So my first visit when I was in New York City was to Ellis Island. And I have family that have come through Ellis Island when they immigrated to this country in the late 1800s. And I was really excited to see it. I was really excited to experience what they experienced and to understand what they experienced. So I get on this boat and I'm talking with my girlfriend who joined me on that trip. And you know, I'm like doe-eyed Pollyanna. I have all these ideas about how exciting it must have been to come to the United States and see the Statue of Liberty and get off that boat and walk up that building to the building where you'd be processed and then deemed citizen of the United States. But it wasn't quite like that. So I get off the boat and I get to the steps that rise up to the building. And I immediately feel heaviness, sadness, anguish. And when you are empathic, you will feel the emotions of others. And this doesn't, you know, this doesn't mean that you only feel energy from people. You can feel energy from a place. You can feel energy from the emotions of people that have left. So it doesn't have to necessarily be, you know, you're sitting next to, you know, a friend or someone on the subway or the bus and you're feeling their energy. You can feel the energy of someone who was on the bus 10 days ago and they're still residual in the bus. Now you have a lot of energy moving in and out of that space, but it's still, if it's significant enough, you can still feel it. Now imagine collective energy of a lot of people feeling the same way, repeatedly visiting a place. You might actually pick up on that. So as I stepped off the boat and I was walking up these steps, this is exactly what I felt. It was overwhelming sadness. And I immediately wanted to cry. I felt like I had no choice. This was the only option I had. I felt just a lot of, I don't want to say self-pity, but sort of like that. Just nowhere else to go. Now, I can't say that that's the same feeling that everyone that came to Ellis Island felt, because I'm sure it wasn't. It didn't seem like that for my ancestors. But for a lot of people, it was. They were fleeing someplace, and this was sort of last hope. They had traveled potentially a very long way. They may have lost someone along the way. A lot of people didn't make it when they took those long trips. So I'm walking up these steps and the feeling just gets heavier and heavier. When we finally enter the building, I am sort of standing in this grand entrance. And as anyone coming into Ellis Island, this is where they would be processed. You'd walk in through these large doors and to the left, you'd go through sort of a corral system. Think of when you're going onto an airplane and you're waiting in security before you go through to your gate, sort of like that. So I'm standing in this grand area and I just freeze because there's a spirit of a woman standing directly in front of me. And she's speaking very quickly and she's begging me to find her child, find my son. And I'm confused at what's happening, and I'm looking at her, and she's speaking very quickly. She's speaking in Italian. Although, when we talk to spirits, they don't have a language. It's like, I know that she's Italian. I know that's what she's speaking, but I understand every word she's saying, because it's not like she's saying it out loud. She's saying it in my mind's eye or in my claircognizance. I know what she's saying. So she's explaining to me that they've taken her son and they won't let her come in to the country. And I ask her, why are they not letting you in? What's happened? And she points to her eyes and she keeps pointing to her eyes. And at this point, the person I'm with, my girlfriend, is staring at me like, what are you doing? Because to everyone else around me, I'm just standing, staring into nothingness in the middle of this entryway in this grand kind of foyer. And so I quickly explained to her, well, there's this woman who's standing in front of me and she's telling me all these things. And so I said, I need to sort of step to the side. Well, this woman, it was like, she was so desperate to get answers and was sort of clinging to me. And this is where I want to pause for a moment and talk a little bit about ghosts, what we call ghosts. And I'm going to quote that. When we encounter a spirit who has essentially, you know, the term that's used most often is essentially is not crossed over, you know, crossed over, gone to the light, gone to that space, whatever that space is, whatever you want to call it, heaven, the tree outside, going into the light, it doesn't matter to me what you call it. They all have this process after death. After death, our soul goes through a transition. It's this sort of transitional awareness. You have awareness that you're no longer in your body. You have awareness that you're some energetic form. You have awareness that you're no longer attached to this sort of earth plane. And that transition is sort of an enlightenment. It's a deeper awareness. It raises your vibration. And so you're no longer sort of attached to the earth. A lot of terms used for this for ghosts or hauntings would be earthbound spirits. You might have heard that term used before. You know, not crossed over. This is basically what I've run into in my experience. This happens for a couple of reasons. One is they're still attached to something here on earth. So as I'm listening to this woman, this would be clearly why she hasn't gone where she needs to go. She hasn't fully gone through her crossing from human to spirit. She's still in this sort of limbo, which is interesting because it's sort of a Catholic term to you know, use the word limbo. But in here, it makes sense. They're sort of in this limbo state. And she's just searching for her son and has got into this sort of cycle. Now, a lot of people ask at this point, well, does she know how long she's been gone? I mean, at this point, I would estimate that she had come anywhere from 1875 to 1910, based on her dress and, you know, sort of demeanor. But to people that have, you know, humans that have crossed in a spirit that are still, you know, air quote, earthbound, time is not really relevant. They're not tracking it the way we do. And if you think about it, the reason that we track time the way we do is because we age, we have goals and ambitions, you know, our life is run by a clock. In spirit, it's not. And there is no, you know, here and now is the only thing they know. It's the only relevance. And if you're in this cycle, you just know that you haven't gotten where you need to and you're still waiting for something, or you know, like I said, there's a couple of reasons why this happens. They don't realize that they're deceased, which could have been for her as well. She may not have realized that she has passed because she's still in the same place and she's still searching for the same thing. So she's feeling connected to the earth because she's lost something and wants to retrieve it. And in this case, it's her child, which as a parent, I can understand that. The others, she may not realize that she's passed away. Sometimes this happens when someone's been in a traumatic accident or if they have committed suicide. Sometimes I get that with suicides. And in her case, she may have recognized that she was deceased, was still looking for her son, but may not have. So I stepped away. I needed to step away and I needed to clear my head and figure out what was happening and not look like a freak in the middle of this grand entrance in Ellis Island. So my girlfriend and I step aside. We actually stepped into a theater off to the side. And in that theater, we were watching a story about immigration, which was great. I'm like, oh, this is good. And then, of course, the entire time, this woman is still standing next to me, begging for her child. Can be very distracting. And at the same time, I was feeling very bad for her. What could I do? So I'm trying to explain to her that she has passed away, that I don't have any way of finding her son, and I don't know when she came. So she starts to give me details about when she got there and what her son's name is and what her name is. And in the meantime, we're still watching this movie that's playing out on the screen in this theater, giving the story of Ellis Island. And we learn through this movie that one of the main reasons why immigrants weren't allowed to come into the United States was if they had discoloring in the eye. This discoloring was called trachoma, and it could cause blindness and death. So anyone that had this walked away with a marking and was not allowed to come into the United States, at least not immediately. Some of these people were sent to hospital. There was a hospital on the grounds, and they would have been sent there for detainment to see if they would get better for recovery. In her case, obviously, she didn't recover, and she passed away on Ellis Island, where she stayed until she met me. Now, at the time, I didn't do psychopomp work, and psychopomp work is the work that you do to help spirits transition from being this earthbound soul spirit to going to the light. Again, whatever you call it, heaven, the light, but no longer in limbo, no longer connected to the earth and living over and over this, this space of non-human but human attachment in search of something. I didn't know how to help her at the time and wasn't able to. She followed me until I left that day onto the boat and back to Manhattan. And I still think about it and send energy to that space for not just her, but anyone that came into the United States and wasn't able to continue on in their journey. So that brings me to my next story, which is the story of the Two Towers and my visit to Ground Zero. The first time I visited New York City and went to Ground Zero, the museum wasn't open yet, and there was some controversy around it, understandably, from the families. The fountains had just been opened, maybe the year prior, and the survivor tree replanted in that memorial. I remember us having to purchase entrance, way in advance. They were letting very limited people in to the memorial to see the fountains. And we had done that. We had showed up, we were early, and they had time, very specific times when you had to be there. So we are getting in line to go in, and I began to walk forward. My girlfriend was in front of me a little ways. I began to walk forward and I get shoved backwards. Now, if this was a person, standing in front of me in real life, which I didn't see them, I only felt them, they would have been a large figure. And basically, as I walked forward, they put both of their hands on my shoulders and pushed me back so as to not enter. It was forceful enough where I had to actually physically take a step back. Otherwise, I would have fallen over like a, you know, timber or just fallen straight back. I took a step backwards and just stood there sort of stunned for a moment. And my girlfriend, who was walking with me, turned and looked like, are you okay? What's wrong? I said, no, I'm fine. I just got shoved. I just got pushed backwards. Now, when something like that happens, it can be shocking. It can be scary. It can be, you know, you might want to turn and run. I didn't. And this is, you know, what I would say to anyone that's experiencing something that like this. Look at your environment. Look at what's going on. I was stepping into the area where the Twin Towers had fallen, where people, many people, lost their lives on a single day. And when I put myself in that space and understanding how energy can be residual in a space, it can survive a very long time in a space, in addition to the spirit of someone. So imagine the energy of, say, law enforcement or firefighters or EMTs trying to help people and also prevent them from running into the building, from running into that space to help their friends, to help their loved ones, all of it. Imagine seeing the tower, the first tower on TV, and knowing that your loved one lived in that, or lived, worked, whatever, in that building. What would you do? You would run to it. So that's the space I put myself in, considering everything that was had happened on that land and in that space. Was it the spirit of a man holding me back? I didn't see him. I only felt it. And I felt a strong sense of protection and was grateful and expressed that. And then walked in to the memorial. On my second visit to New York City, the museum had opened the year prior. And so I was looking forward to, again, visiting and paying my respects and seeing the museum. I walked into the museum to be greeted by not one, but at least three spirits. These spirits were not earthbound spirits. The difference is there's no agenda like help me or, you know, show me this or do this for me. There was no agenda. There was only guidance. The first thing that they collectively told me was that I needed to prepare myself. And so I just nodded, okay. They explained that this is the space where they are buried. So I just nodded, okay. And that I was going to walk forward and step to a landing, and this is where they are. And as you walk through the museum in the entrance, you walk and the floor slowly descends. And there are images that are off-centered and you kind of walk past them. There are people that have passed away in the attacks. And you don't see it right away because you're seeing these images. The floor is declining. Then there's a wall and you walk around the wall and you step out to this landing and you're looking down inside the belly of the tower into the depths of the earth. And to the left are all of these sheets, square sheets of blue paper. And this is what they explained to me. This is where we are buried. And still didn't understand, and you necessarily wouldn't when you're first looking at this. It just looks like a wall of blue paper, just multiple different shades of blue. And then they explained to me that this is where our remains are. Now, in order to see and really understand and read the plaque, you have to go all the way down into the belly of the tower to read the plaques that are in front of this wall of blue. The blue papers represent what the sky looked like that day. And it's a beautiful memorial. It brought me to absolute tears and just reminded me of how beautiful our souls are and how they transcend our bodies. And even though they could recognize, those three spirits that were with me that day could recognize that this is where they were buried and be memorialized, that they are not there, that their soul is eternal. And so on this day, my heart goes out to those who have lost their loved ones in that horrific attack, and that we remember that the soul is eternal.
Thank you for listening, and as always, you can continue to support me on Anchor, where you can also find my other podcast, Breaking Beyond Guided Meditations.